You are listening to a sermon by Janice Kreider, recorded on Sunday, July 24th, 2022, at Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I recently had an email from someone I'm going to call Nathan. Remember Prophet Nathan from Ruth's sermon last week, the whistleblower to King David? Maybe you didn't know, but we have a Nathan as part of Point Grey. Nathan and I email back and forth sometimes. A few weeks ago, Nathan wrote this to me. Hopefully, each of us will find ways to live according to the ways our prophet Jesus lived. One of the ways we are challenged today is the way we sell our properties to the highest bidder, neglecting the needs of our fellow church members who can't pay as much. Well, I was struck by Nathan's statement because that's exactly what I did a year ago. I sold my property to the highest bidder. I didn't even think about my fellow church members who can't afford to buy condos, let alone houses, in this hot market. Here is my reply to Nathan with my excuses. It has taken me a while to compose a response. Your comment here really struck me because a year ago we did just this. We sold our house to the highest bidder. So I'm not sure how to respond. In a way, it's a matter of trust. If we had sold to young people at a lower price, what's to keep them from selling in a few years at market price? And how do we choose which young people? We did give away all our excess possessions, many via Buy Nothing Dunbar Musqueam. I was pleased that many ended up being given to Musqueam people. Other stuff went to MCC, books to Regent College, and so on. Very little got trashed. So that was good for the environment. Also good for the environment and our health is that moving here means that we're driving less. We can walk or take transit to many places. And we live near some other Point Grey people, Andre and Hannah Laurie, John and Alice, Paul Thiessen. The problem with being a US citizen is that selling property that has increased in value generates capital gains tax, more money for armaments for the US military. A way to reduce part of this is to put aside money dedicated to charity via a foundation. We've done that for our house sale, but it's only a partial solution. Life is complicated. Decisions have to be made that are less than desirable. This is probably too much information. Maybe you have some suggestions. The living arrangement of the Lee and Yang families is a challenging witness to our congregation of a different way of living. It's a practical way to move forward, but requires good relationships. So that was the end of my email. Having those good relationships that the Lee and Yang families enjoy is necessary, but challenging. Both secular people and Christians have the ideal of living in community, but many communities fail. We know from Jesus and from Paul's writings that good relationships and acceptance of ourselves and others unlike ourselves is key to following the Christian way. It's an important factor in congregational life. Psalm 85 that was read describes an Old Testament model of community living like New Testament teachings. Psalm 85 says, a community who turns to God in their hearts will experience love, faithfulness, peace, and the land yielding its increase. Injustice and inequality are not characteristics of that kind of community. But when we read parts of the Old Testament, we see history of the Israelites that's completely opposite. Some stories could be made into a violent video game like the passage in Joshua that Andre read. My apologies if it gave you a headache. It's a copy-paste piece of scripture with every couple of verses identical except for the names. How do we reconcile those warring Old Testament stories about land, property, and people with what the New Testament teaches? In order to deflect and detract our prophet Nathan from my oblivious mentality, I sent him an article from Christian Century. Walter Brueggemann wrote about the work of an Old Testament scholar named Norman Gottwald, who died recently at age 95. In 1979, Gottwald wrote The Tribes of Yahweh, A Sociology of the Religion of Liberated Israel, 1250 to 1050 BCE. Nathan apparently liked the article and told me that I should read the article as a sermon. So I volunteered to do a sermon. But don't worry, I'm not going to read the entire article. I'm reading a selection which describes how Gottwald has a different take on what might have happened in the time of Judges, the book between Joshua and 1 Samuel. So I'll be reading this quote. Gottwald's book reads the Old Testament with reference to the interpretive categories of the social sciences, notably the function of economics. Specifically, it focuses on the books of Judges and the tribal configuration in Israel before the emergence of the monarchy. Gottwald reviews and rejects the notion that there was a violent conquest of the land by the invasive, intrusive Israelites from Egypt. Instead, he champions the thesis that the conflict narrated in Judges was a result of a peasant revolt, whereby the subsistence farmers in Canaan violently revolted against the Canaanite city kings and aggressive landowners who acted in predatory, exploitative ways toward the vulnerable peasants. That is, he proposes that the narrative reflects something of a class conflict. In the confessional life of early Israel, Yahweh is inescapably and integrally linked to economic fairness. Gottwald's two-way articulation of function means that Israel cannot have Yahweh without the social vision and practice of neighborly covenantalism. Nor could it have such a social vision and practice except as linked to Yahweh. The counterpoint is also true. Canaan could not have its predatory city king economic system without Baal. And Baal could not be embraced without the embrace of a predatory economy. For Baal is, in the horizon of Israel, the great lord and legitimator of economic predation. The linkage is evident if we consider the dramatic contest of gods at Mount Carmel between Yahweh and Baal in 1 Kings 18. Alongside the dispute about land in the narrative of Naboth's vineyard, 1 Kings 21. Ahab and Jezebel, as followers and advocates for Baal, feel legitimate in seizing peasant land, even as Elijah, an advocate for Yahweh, speaks a harsh word on behalf of the peasant interest of Naboth. This linkage is a defining one for Gottwald and can be frequently observed in both the Old and the New Testaments. A key distortion of biblical faith in Gottwald's frame of reference is the widespread, endlessly recurring attempt to have the God of the Bible without the socioeconomic practice that goes with that God. And this is the last sentence of the quote. I'm going to read it again. A key distortion of biblical faith in Gottwald's frame of reference is the widespread, endlessly recurring attempt to have the God of the Bible without the socioeconomic practice that goes with that God. On September 26th, Chan gave us a talk entitled Finances, Bulls, and Forgiveness. Chan explained the year of the Jubilee as a time of economic reset for Israel. Every 7 years, debts were forgiven. But every 50 years, property was returned to its original owner. People were given a clean slate. They neither inherited the property amassed by their parents and grandparents, nor did the poor have to take over the debts from their parents. Our economic system appears to reset itself every 10 to 12 years, according to Chan. But instead of resulting in more equality, as the Old Testament teaches, reduction in the numbers of both poor and rich people, today's reset results in even more inequality. Chan ended his talk by saying there are, quote, ways we can do better, unquote. What are those ways? As part of the boomer generation, I benefited by the real estate boom in Vancouver, having a job with a pension, financial support from parents, higher education, ability to pay off student debts. Others of you benefited by the economic growth of the 50s and 60s, along with a steady career and profitable investments. Today, many younger people experience something quite different. Jobs below their qualifications, expensive rent, no hope of owning property, unemployment, student debt. Are there ways that our congregation or our society can do better? How can we follow Philippians 4:4? Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. This is the essence of what Point Grey's prophet Nathan points out by, quote, neglecting the needs of our fellow church members, unquote. I already mentioned the Li and Yang's different model, that of communal living, inspired by the Hutterites. I wish I had many more examples of a different way, but I do have three, and one from 1986, and the other two more recent. 36 years ago in 1986, the Catholic Church put a convent up for sale. The PCDA was one of the bidders. The Catholic realtor for the Catholic Church liked PCDA's vision for the building, and she must have encouraged the Catholic Church to choose the society as the buyer, despite the society not being the highest bidder. As you know, over the years, many students have benefited from this untypical choice. A second example, it may seem like a small one, but it's good. Is what one Point Grey person has offered to me. When we moved, I lost my garden. But this person has provided me rent-free space to grow vegetables and flowers by digging up the front lawn, part of the front lawn. And I'm pleased to once again be able to give away vegetables. The third example happened last week, and it involved my little sister. Well, she's about my size, but she's the youngest in the family. She and her husband sold a 5-unit row house in the city of Lancaster to the Chestnut Housing Corporation. My sister and her husband had been renting out the units as affordable apartments to low-wage frontline workers, but they wanted to divest themselves of the property because they're moving to a different state. They sold the house well below what it could have been sold for because they were familiar and sympathetic with the goals of the Chestnut Housing Corporation. The society provides traditional housing in Lancaster, which is not as unaffordable as Vancouver, but still has many people who need low-cost housing. The society currently has 12 units, but is looking for additional units in order to reach their goal of 100 in 5 years. This nonprofit society had its beginnings in my sister's Mennonite congregation. A wealthy board member of the society contributed toward the cost of the building to further assist with the purchase, and the realtor gave up his fees. All of these examples involve the faith community, and they show a different way. Let's not be oblivious to opportunities to remedy injustice and inequality. We think about the words to the song that Ruth played, help us to help each other. And Philippians 4:4, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. I'd like to end with this quote from Rosemary Harding. No one need starve. There's enough land and enough food. No one need die of thirst. There is enough water. No one need live without mercy. There's no end to grace. And we are all instruments of grace. The more we give it, the more we share it, the more we use it, the more God makes. There's no scarcity of love. There is plenty and always more.